This is In the Black, a leadership, strategy and business podcast brought to you by CPA Australia.
Hello and welcome to the In the Black Career Hack Series. I am Jessica Muddett. Over four episodes, we will speak to leading career and employment experts to bring you the latest strategies and tips to help supercharge your career. To help us understand some of the issues to consider when planning your career, I'm speaking to Catherine McMillan, Managing Director of Circle Recruitment and HR. Catherine is an accredited recruitment professional, a certified professional member of Australian Human Resource Institute, and holds a master's degree in human resource management and industrial relations. Welcome, Catherine. It's great to have you here.
Thanks, Jess. Great to be here.
So my first question for you is, when it comes to planning our careers, do you think that it is never too early or too late to start? I just wonder whether some people are simply so busy in their roles that they maybe don't give career planning much thought, but I would dare say there are drawbacks to not giving it sufficient attention. Would you agree?
Look, I would agree, and I think it's a broader question than just planning your career. I think it's actually about planning your life to a certain degree. Certainly, there's a time when it is too early to do that. I mean, when we're young, we all dream of being an astronaut or a fire engine driver or whatever it is. But there does come a time in your life when I think you need to think carefully about where do you actually want to go in your life, and how you want to get there, i.e. via your career. So I think that we shouldn't think about our career in isolation, but in its relationship to our life. How happy does it make us doing what we're doing? Does it give us the financial reward that we're looking for? Will it enable us to live the type of life that, you know, we would like to live? And planning with anything is ultimately very important. So I think taking the time to sit down, think about your priorities, your goals, where you want to go, and maybe isolating those small steps that you can take today to be able to plan the end game where you'd like to end up.
Okay, let's talk about being a generalist versus a specialist. What would you say the pros and cons of each? And maybe some people are inherently suited to one or the other, but surely it's worth thinking about which way to go.
Yeah, absolutely. But look, it's not something that you can really think about very early on in your career, because when you're starting out, you don't know all the, you know, the outer ends of a role to understand what those specializations might be. So generally people start as generalists. As a generalist, there's certainly generally wider opportunities in regards to, you know, the amount of work that is out there. Being a specialist, a more niche role, so there may be less jobs but may also be higher remuneration in regards to your specialisation. And I guess something to consider is that the world these days really wants specialization as well. You know, if you look at accountants, originally, you know, you were an accountant and then there would be a specialization to be a tax accountant, for example. But, you know, these days there could be a tax accountant that specializes in superannuation, a tax accountant that specializes in investment, a tax accountant that specializes in company tax, and so on and so forth. So there's a wide range of specializations. And I think when considering, you know, the advantages or disadvantages, my advice would be start as a generalist and try to understand as much of that role as you can and the different specializations that might fall within that role, so that you can then make a decision down the track if specialization is the way that you want to progress.
Because ultimately we'll be led by our interests, won't we? You need to follow where you're most interested in focusing, and then that surely will be linked to the level of success you'll achieve.
You know, we're at work for an awful long time, a long part of our life, and it's important that you really enjoy what you're doing and that you're interested in that. And it's like an ever-evolving sort of circle where the more interested you are in something, the more that you practice it, the more that you practice it, the better you become. The better you become, the more interested you are in it. So it's an upward spiral, you know, as long as you've got that interest initially.
Mm, it's those 10,000 hours to perfect something, isn't it?
Absolutely. But if you love doing it, you know, it's 10,000 hours that seems like 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's so important, I think.
Yes.
Okay, Catherine, what is your advice on how someone could possibly test the waters in different specialist fields before making a decision? I was thinking it would be quite daunting to many to simply leave a familiar area for one place that they think they may enjoy, but they don't know for certain if they will. And perhaps that fear could actually hold someone back and keep them in their lane, so to speak.
Yeah, look, absolutely. And I think that speaking to your employer is a good place to start in regards to, you know, letting your current manager know where your interests lie and where you might like to get experience in a certain area. Because if you don't speak up and verbalise that interest, potentially you'll never get those opportunities. So always good to approach your current employer and have a chat about a specialisation. You may be able to start undertaking some work in that area or being just involved in that area in some way. When, you know, young people are starting out their career, quite often larger companies have graduate programs which are excellent at really moving their new staff around in regards to different areas of specialisation. So that can be fantastic. But if that's not an opportunity that you've had, another thing that any of us can do is essentially being involved in online groups. So looking at different online groups, looking at being involved in discussions, chats about, you know, what's going on in the in that area there, and just being involved basically in that specialisation can really help you as well.
Okay. Let's turn now to the perennial question of big firm versus small firm. In your opinion, Catherine, what should a person consider when deciding whether to join a big firm or a small firm?
Look, I think some of the things that you need to consider are the opportunities that are available. So often a larger firm has more opportunities in regards to specialisation because they have more departments and areas. However, a smaller firm will have a much shorter chain of command. So often the ability to experience higher level of responsibilities and to become a stronger generalist can be greater in a small firm. I think you need to think about your career advancement either way. You know, where would you like to be in 2 to 3 years? Is there an opportunity in that firm for you to move into that area? You know, what are the specialisations within the firm? So as I said, in a larger firm, there's probably stronger specialisation areas. But in a smaller firm, you can often learn much faster because there is that shorter chain of command and you're so much closer to the coalface than you are in a larger organisation. So I think really reviewing both organisations and looking at the, you know, the pros and cons of both of them, and then, you know, speaking with your managers there, understanding their priorities, and then, you know, to a certain degree, following your heart.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Because they're quite different experiences. And it may be worthwhile trying both and then seeing, you know, which delivers the most satisfaction and opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it can often be a very good growth activity to move from either a large corporate to a smaller business or vice versa, because they're both very different beasts and they will give you very different skill sets as well.
Catherine, what are your tips on how to work out your priorities and translate them into a career plan that will help you achieve them? And do you agree that we should check in every so often on our priorities in case they have changed? And I think it's no bad thing, surely, if priorities do change. It's probably inevitable in life that things will change over time and we should be flexible and adapt our career plan to accommodate it.
Because your priorities change. And as I mentioned at the beginning, you know, this is very much because it's so closely related to your life plan. And your life plan when you're in your early 20s is very different to, you know, when you're in your 40s or when you're in your 60s. So your priorities are going to change, you know, all of the time. And that's why I think it's important when you look at your priorities and your career plan that you really think about your life and where you want to go and what you want to do with your life. You know, money isn't everything. So sometimes following a career that perhaps doesn't give you as high a remuneration but gives you an incredible intrinsic motivation because you love it so much and you're so happy doing that is going to be 1,000 times more worthwhile than chasing the dollars for a role where, you know, you're not happy. So I think happiness is something that you really need to consider very carefully. So I think it's a great idea to write down your priorities, you know, much like you might write down your New Year's resolutions and then go back and have a look at them, you know, in a couple of years to reassess. And then that will help you in regards to perhaps you can say, well, I did achieve that and I feel great about that, but now my priorities have changed. Now I want to, you know, focus on this new path that I'm going down. So, and I think writing it down is really important and, you know, popping it away somewhere in a drawer or something that you look at once in a while because ideas, if they're not written down, can be very fleeting and then you can think, what was it I wanted to achieve? You know, I can't actually remember now, so much else has gone on. So definitely write them down and look at your career plan in correlation, I think, with your life plan and happiness as well.
That's wonderful. I think that's very wise advice. Can you please outline the importance of continually learning new skills and technologies? A lot is spoken about being a lifelong learner, but I'd love to know what this really means in practice and what the benefits are of remaining eager to grow as a professional.
There's a wonderful saying, and I won't have the words correct, but it's something like, you know, if you are not moving forward, you're essentially going backwards, even if you think you're just standing still. And I think that is so relevant. And specifically now when the rate of technological change is just so fast and the rate of change generally in society is very fast and always seems to be speeding up. So if you are not moving forward, you are going to be going backwards because things will change and will leave you behind. One of the most important things I think about, you know, that lifelong learning sort of idiom is to continue to have a growth mindset throughout your life. So to actively work, you know, not to have a closed mindset and think, well, this is the way I've done this and I'll always do it this way, or this is my belief and I will always hold that belief. The ability to change your mind is one of the, you know, the greatest things I think that you can work on. And in regards to lifelong learning, looking at things with an open mind, questioning yourself, changing your mind where you might have said, you know, that's not important. But now, you know, a few years later, I realized that is really important and I wasn't right thinking that back, you know, previously. So I think keeping up, especially with technology, is so important. But keeping up with new ideas and with opening your mind to considering things that you might not have considered previously or looking at things in a new way, incredibly important, not only for your career path, but for your own enjoyment of life and your own enjoyment of the situations around you and the new opportunities that open up. You know, may not be related to career path, but I think having that growth mindset and just being open is incredibly important to us, not only for career, but I think to us as human beings.
Okay, Catherine, if you could share one piece of advice on what to do now to prepare for the future, what would that advice be?
Look, I think my advice would be pretty much the same as my last answer, actually, in regards to having an open mindset. I think looking at anybody's future, the most important thing is to have an open growth mindset, to educate yourself, to be accepting of change, because as we often hear, change is the only constant in life. So I think for us all to be able to accept change is a great piece of advice. I've probably given you about three pieces of advice there, but I'll succinctly say growth mindset, acceptance of change, keep learning, and keep your mind inquiring all the time.
Well, thanks for sharing them with us today, Catherine.
No problems. My pleasure. It's been wonderful to be on the podcast.
We hope you're enjoying In the Black's Career Hacks series. If you're interested in the latest news, analysis, policy updates, and business insights, you should check out CPA Australia's With Interest podcast. Join us as we dive into the news and delve into the business issues of the day. Each week, we talk to thought leaders from across the accounting, finance, strategy, economic, and business spectrum. And you get their expert opinions. Now, back to In the Black.
To help us think about how to navigate any unexpected twists and turns in our careers, I'm speaking to David Simpson, who is the Managing Director of Melbourne HR and a former Navy officer who specialises in HR consulting and outsourcing to Australia's SME market. Welcome, David. It's great to have you here.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Okay, so my first question for you is concerning the fact that for many years, the traditional career trajectory has been up, climbing the corporate ladder one step at a time. But the pandemic has made many professionals recognise that up is no longer the only way and that there can be many benefits to a sideways move. You yourself made quite the sideways move from the Navy. What prompted that and what did the experience teach you about having multiple careers?
Sure. I mean, I think when I entered the Navy, I always had this idea in my head that I might do what's called a short career, which in my version was 9 years long. It's not that short, but I did do a degree in that time as well. And I would say that I always had this idea that I would consider my options or I would always reassess my career. And I had that thought at a very young age. Based on absolutely zero knowledge and zero mentorship, I think I really just stumbled upon it. But it actually helped me a lot because I do think that when you have a career over an extended period of time and you watch other people have their careers, you suddenly realize that upward trajectory really only belongs in the large end of town. Anybody in the medium to small end of town will always have a zigzagging career, or 99% will have a zigzagging career. And that's actually really beneficial because you can do a lot when you zigzag and take two sets of careers or take different positions in other roles. A good example is, there's a real concept of brand when it comes to employers. So when you put like a brand on your resume, maybe it's Microsoft, maybe you worked for Apple in Australia, or you worked for Mercedes-Benz or PricewaterhouseCoopers, there's this concept of a brand on a resume that has impact. And zigzagging can actually do some pretty wonderful things for you because you can use that brand to give you a promotion in a less sexy employer or a less sexy space. Maybe it's a large scale blinds retailer or something, right? Something that's not necessarily really particularly sexy or that you'd ever think about it. And you take up a position as a finance manager there because they're looking for someone they can't necessarily attract, experienced finance managers. So they're looking for, young hotshots to take that step up. And so that creates a zigzag effect because you then go into that finance manager job and then you go out 2, 3, 4 years later, you apply for a finance manager at Apple Australia, right? So then you're using in one way, you're zagging up and using a brand to provide you a promotion. And in the second step, you're zagging, I think that's the word we use. and we zag across to achieve the same position, probably with a bit more money and a bit more tenure and a sexier brand. And that concept of zigging and zagging, you know, people do that all the time without probably even realizing it. There are probably people who zig and zag in their careers. And if you pull them up on it, they'd be like, wow, I've never even thought that that's what I was doing all these years. But actually they were.
David, it sounds like there are some great benefits to the right sideways move. In what circumstances should a person consider one in your experience?
Yeah, I mean, I touched on it earlier before, but I think that concept of zigging and zagging is key. They'll provide your first two reasons straight off. You know, the one is, you know, consider a sideways move if you think it results in a promotion. The second is you might look at an absolute lateral move, so no promotion, if you think that it gives you good positioning in your next role thereafter. So good positioning is where you take a role knowing that it could lead to something else. So you're kind of almost like in chess when you pre-position pieces. You're deciding to pre-position yourself in your career. And a lot of people do this by luck. They take a particular job because someone said, oh no, but there's going to be some great opportunity in a year or two, and they trust that person and it comes good. And the opportunity comes good, right? But you can do it yourself. You can look at an organization or go, do you know what, I want to get into FMCG on the finance side. So I'm going to take that job with, you know, this supermarket, and I'm going to work, you know, with IGA or Aldi or whatever it is. And then after that, I'm going to look at, you know, getting into agri export or something, right? You know, whatever it happens to be, but you can look at those moves as sequences. And I think, you know, just touching on that when it comes to sideways, I mean, the obvious one, by the way, let's just, you know, rip the bandaid off. The obvious one is you're bored and you don't like what you're doing. And that's totally reasonable. You know, if you are bored, if it doesn't work for you, look for something else.
Do something about it.
Absolutely. And if you're an auditor in any sized accounting firm, understand that being internal and external is vastly different. So, you know, sitting there, I think there's two things here. Is that one, don't be afraid to take a risk, particularly early in your career. Early in your career is the time to take risks, right? Absolutely the time to take risks, because you can always go back. Do you know what I mean? And you lose a year or two. Right. And it's nothing. That's peanuts in the grand scheme of things. When it's the start of your career. And potentially you won't lose anything, because they'll see the experience you had in the other place is valuable. So what I would say is that, you know, understand that, you know, just because an accountant in one place and an accountant in another place it is not the same. It's just not the same. And so, you know, finance is a really broad space, and you can be doing lots of different things in different organizations. And if you are working in a firm in the firm side of things, then going internal is a great way to shake things up and to do something different. If you are looking at a sideways career, you know, there's nothing really wrong with having a crack at something early in your career. I mean, you can do it anytime, but what I'm trying to convey is that it's easier at the early part of your career, and you just don't realize that when you're young. When you're young, you look at this and you're like, oh no, but you know, 1 or 2 years is such a big deal, but actually it's kind of not. And also you can learn a heap by doing something different. Like it's never a waste of time. It's never a waste of time, because you can pick up, you know, new skills and new information, and you can apply that to different places. So I think, you know, in terms of what reasons, the reasons could be lots, many, varied, and I'd say to you that there's probably very few that are illegitimate.
David, could you please outline the importance of transferable skills and how to build them, and what is it about them that makes them so valuable?
Okay, I think you're going to probably cut a few things up here. I will say to you that I'd say there's probably two types of transferable skills if I'm going to try and simplify it. And the first one is your general employee skills, right? Your general employee skills are your ability to work in a team, your ability to influence the people around you, both up and down and sideways in the hierarchy of an organization, your ability to lead teams, and your ability to kind of just get stuff done. There are just some people out there that really attack things, right? And we all have a little bit of it, but some of us have a lot of it. And so when an employee comes along that's willing to attack things and take problems away from the manager, then that becomes just like the best thing. They just become your most favorite employee, and you can't help it, right? They are your most favorite employee, and so I think so. That's one. That's like the core of those general skills. And the other side of it is you will pick up skills that are you pick up anything from the most inane, or you think is most inane, which is, you know, just learning how to write. You know, learning how to write persuasively. You know, when you have to pitch something and, you know, it's all about the numbers, except that you kind of have to pitch it, right? You have to convince everybody that what your analysis was correct and your recommendation is correct. So even something as simple as persuasive writing can have an impact on you almost on a day-to-day basis. And so, you know, learning all these things, and that's what makes them kind of powerful, because I would say they're the glue that sticks your actual technical skills together.
David, let's turn to today's challenging economic times. What would be your advice for navigating choppy career waters, such as redundancies or some other kind of career setback? I'm sure that it can be really overwhelming to face something like that. So any tips you might have on maintaining a healthy kind of outlook about the future would be good to have as well.
You know, if it gets you down, that's just fine, because you've just gone through something really difficult. And if you're sad about it and you're not, and it's hurting you, then that's just fine. And if it's hurting you a lot, then, you know, definitely get some help. But I would say to you that, you know, particularly if you have some experience up your belt, some experience, then I'd say that it's not that big a deal. What you do is you make sure you take your feelers out pretty wide, and set yourself a bit of a goal in terms of applying for roles, and, you know, particularly if you're in, you know, this is for the finance sector. I mean, you know, look really wide. I mean, you know, there are people in the finance team in every company that isn't a corner florist, right? So, you know, anything above that has a finance team. So, you know, you cast it pretty wide, and also try and get yourself excited about something. Like if you'd always wanted to work in the automotive sector and you just got made redundant from, you know, a medium-sized accounting firm, then look for some finance jobs in some automotive, brands, because that might be something exciting. And also, I think the big one is you know, it's a good idea to apply for some promotions. You know, don't be down on yourself, but give yourself a mix. So make sure that you're applying for roles that are lateral, so that you can demonstrate your experience and say, hey, I've done this job and I can do it for you too. But also, you know, look for some promotion opportunities as well. Don't short sell yourself. You know, make sure that if you're put in that position, you may as well look at high and medium. There's no lows here. I'll look at high and medium. And if you find yourself at home stewing, do something. There's lots of ways in which you can work where you don't get paid. Volunteer somewhere. Like, don't let yourself stew. I think one of the problems that people have is once they start stewing at home, they sort of get into a tighter and tighter ball. So there's quite a mental health component here. And applying for roles can be a bit of a marathon rather than a sprint. So it's really important to look after yourself, and that's, you know, potentially getting some professional help. But also, it could just be something as simple as, you know, make sure you go out for a walk every day, and make sure that, you know, if you've got some spare time and, you know, you've thought about volunteering at the local cat shelter, then, you know, apply and see what happens, and you know, do those things. It's not, you've suddenly got some spare time. So, you know, do yourself a favor and take advantage of it, and look at other opportunities. So I think that's key. I think finding another role is actually more of an internal struggle than it is an external one. I think once you've got experience up your sleeve, unless you're very senior, in which case there are limited roles. If you're in the early part of your career but you have experience, or you're in the mid part of your career, you shouldn't find it overly difficult to find a role in, you know, a reasonable amount of time, say anywhere from sort of, you know, 2 to 6 months, right?
Yeah.
And I think so. I think the biggest thing you have to set yourself is a goal about how you are going to spend your time and how you are going to manage your mental health, so that you can maintain that marathon. So be optimistic. If you've got a lot of energy and you're feeling good, then make a bunch of applications. Take your time with those applications. If you want to work there, you know, write a proper cover letter for each individual job. Don't just write the same rubbish that everybody else writes on the cover letter. Actually say, this is why I want the job. Like, just tell people why you want the job. Don't tell us that I think I have the skills to do this job and blah, blah, blah. I'll make that determination where you have the skills to do the job. You don't have to tell me that. Just tell me why you want it. What interests you in this job? Like, tell me what interests you in this job. So I think, in terms of navigating choppy waters, I think if you find yourself in a situation where you're without employment, the key situation is to stake up, look after your mental health, realize it's a marathon, and set yourself small goals and make sure you look after yourself. In terms of preventing it in the first place, work hard, make yourself indispensable. And then if you think your company is in trouble or you think that there might be redundancies in the future, don't just sit at your computer and sweat about it. Apply for some jobs.
Final question. What are your tips for learning from mistakes, both your own and other people's? The fact of the matter is that we're all going to make them. And I guess it's more about not repeating the same ones over and over.
Yeah, it's a tough one because I think it has a lot to do with ego. I think that you've got to take the ego out of it. And, you've got to sit there and sometimes you've got to look for it. Unfortunately, a lot of people who are going to be your boss or your manager or your supervisor, they're just going to, they may not be your particular type of person. You may not, they may not be someone that you gel particularly with, and therefore taking advice from them or taking criticism from them becomes harder. And it's in those times that distinguishes the people who push up and those who don't, because it's the people who sit there and go, I don't like the way this person communicates. I don't like the way this person delivers their criticism. But I'm going to take it. I'm going to dissect it, and I'm going to learn from it anyway. And so hopefully you have great supervisors. But the reality is you're going to get some who are at least average, if not poor. And you need to make good on that situation. And so you should always be dissecting what you do and how you could do it better. And what did the person next to you do? And it doesn't have to be an unhealthy competitive spirit. Like it really can just be about you looking for self-improvement. I think ego definitely becomes that's your biggest obstacle, because you sit there and you go, no, I put effort into this, so it's good. No. You put effort into it, you delivered something, and it's guaranteed to be wrong in some aspects. Like, it doesn't matter who gives me what, I will find something wrong with it. And therefore, there is something to learn from it. And you need to have that mindset that everything you do is wrong. It's just that, that wrong is really an opportunity to learn from it. And you may have achieved the standard required that your company or organization wanted of you to deliver on it, but there was another level. There was another piece of polish. There was something else to be extracted. There was other information to be added. Like, there's always something. And even if you don't do it next time, understanding that you could go that direction means that next time you might be able to tailor your response a bit better and make it that little bit sharper. My advice would be talk to supervisors, talk to managers, offer to have a coffee with them and ask them about their careers. Because it is learning from other people, hearing their stories and asking about what their career story was is one of the best ways to get a little snapshot or summary of what is possible. And if you keep asking that question to lots of different people and you collect lots of different stories, then suddenly you start building a map of what's possible with the people around you and what their experiences were. And that is going to help guide your own career progression, because one of the hardest things to do for someone is to plan their career when they have so little knowledge of what that career really entails, because you're at the bottom and you haven't experienced it and you haven't learned about it. And so hearing people's stories and asking them is the best way. And asking your manager, sitting down for a coffee or even in a quiet moment, just going, hey, I want to learn more about this career, after where I'm at. can we grab a coffee, or you're happy to have a chat about it now? You know, I just love to hear what you did and what steps you took, and where'd you work and why'd you choose and was it a good idea and all those questions. And if you have those stories, they're actually pretty powerful.
Thanks a lot for your time, David.
Not a problem. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
If you've enjoyed this episode, help others discover In the Black by leaving us a review and sharing this episode with colleagues, clients, or anyone else interested in leadership, strategy, and business. To find out more about our other podcasts, check out the show notes for this episode. We hope you can join us again next time for another episode of In the Black.